This is Kate Turkington on Travels with Kate, only on 101.9 High FM.
And a very good morning to you, wherever you are. Here we are. I'm Kate, our wonderful team, Senator Betsy, my producer, Craig Guthrie, the technical wizard who keeps the whole studio going, and you, of course, wherever you are. We've got a very interesting program for you today. A bit later on in the program, I'm going to be talking to Zelda Lagrange. You might remember she wrote the best-selling novel, Good Morning, Mr. Mandela. She was Mandela's personal right-hand assistant for nearly 20 years. And she's just published her second book, What Number? So we're going to be talking to her a bit later on. But first of all, I just wanted to share with you, I've been reading up the British Daily Telegraph. I read it not for politics, because it has very good sports writers and very good television and arts critics. I also read the New York Times, again, not for the politics, but for all the things I've just mentioned, and BBC and News 24. That's my morning read with my coffee. But the Daily Telegraph just did a quite a big survey of the world's best airlines, and I thought you might be interested. And what did they look at? These were the criteria: legroom, punctuality, baggage allowance, the route network, the quality of the home airport, the age of the fleet, the value of the rewards program, and the tastiness of in-flight meals. And without any doubt whatsoever, and you probably know the answer even before I tell you, the Gulf Airlines absolutely led the way. The Dubai-based Emirates, the Doha headquarters Qatar, and Abu Dhabi's Etihad. They lead the way, followed very, very closely by Singapore Airlines. The one, if you like, for the Gulf Airlines, so you have to fly via the Middle East. So you've got to stop at Dubai Airport, which I hate. It's so soulless and glitzy and money, money, money. And you walk for miles between one place and another. And not quite as bad as Doha and Abu Dhabi, not quite so bad. But they absolutely lead the field by miles. Singapore Airlines have flown, and also Turkish Airlines, they rate incredibly highly. Why? Because of the quality of its food. I haven't flown Turkish Airlines for a few years, and we'll be flying them early next year. And also the staggering number of destinations which passengers can fly to from their new hub in Istanbul. So there you go. And I'll tell you a bit more about the others after the break. But just before the break, to remind you of our WhatsApp number, you can call us or WhatsApp us at any time, 061-895-1019. Let me give that to you again, 061-895-1019. And also, don't forget, have a pen and paper, pencil and paper, or your phone ready, because I'm going to talk about a couple of books before we talk to Zelda.
This is Kate Turkington on Travels with Kate, only on 101.9 High FM.
Let me tell you about Dis-Chem Wellness Clinic for Adults. Offers convenience and professional care to help you manage your health risks. Whether you're having your regular wellness checks, such as blood pressure or cholesterol, Dis-Chem Wellness Clinics offer you a broad range of health screening services, including female health screening with pap smears, family planning, and pregnancy screening. Fast, affordable, and with care. And find your nearest Dis-Chem Wellness Clinic inside Dis-Chem Pharmacies. Better health starts here. Okay, now I was telling you about airlines. One British report, there are reports and reports and fake news and fake news, but this is a very well documented report on the world's best airlines. And I was just telling you the Gulf-based airlines just head the field, followed by Singapore Airlines, followed by Turkish Airlines. And by the way, Air France also made the top 10. Another airline, of course, doesn't fly to Johannesburg, but Japan's two major airlines, Japan Airlines and All Nippon Airways, they've got very snazzy premium economy and business class. And although they don't fly to SA, you can go with them via Emirates or whatever, just for a bit of a change. Okay, now I have a couple of books I want to talk to you about. Can you believe this? Freshwater Fishes of Southern Africa. And it's published by Straight Nature. And Straight Nature really do the most beautiful, beautiful books. Everything from trees and mammals to birds. And in this case, fishes. Why have I chosen to talk about this book? Because I know lots of you, or probably quite a few of you in your family, are fishermen, women, people, whatever they correct term is. So this is a complete guide to the freshwater fishes of Southern Africa. It's by Paul Skelton, and you can look up every one of these very easy to use books. I looked up goldfish because we've got a goldfish pond in the garden. One of my grandsons looks after it. Apparently they were domesticated in the Far East thousands of years ago and only came to Europe in the 16th century and subsequently came here. They're not quite sure when they came here. We have to cover our pond with a net, otherwise the herons and even the hardyhills will have a go at the fish. So it'll give you all the information. And those of you, my son's a freshwater fisherman, trout. Those of you who want to know about trout, there's some good entries on trout. You know, we didn't have trout in South Africa. It's not an indigenous fish. And they were actually imported here. Let me just have a look. Okay, introduced from the United Kingdom to Southern Africa in 1897. And of course, now they're in dams and hatcheries all over South Africa, Southern Africa, East Africa. So the rainbow trout. I actually like fishing. I very rarely go. When I'm in the Okavango, I'll throw a line over the side of the Mokoro and fish for tiger fish. And here in South Africa on the Jazini Dam, it's the only place in South Africa actually where you can fish for tiger fish. That's a lovely thing to do. Go on a houseboat there for two or three nights and just sort of go out in a little boat and throw your line over the side and watch the birds and the elephants, because also Jazini Dam has by its side the Pongola. I'm not sure if it's nature reserve or game reserve, the correct title, but it's one of the oldest, if not the oldest in South Africa. So as you're drifting along, you've got elephants and buffalo and crocodiles and something you don't see very often in the Lowveld, the bush pig. You know, you see the warthogs, but you very rarely, I can't even think when I saw a bush pig in the Lowveld. Somebody could put me right, I'm sure, maybe in some of the game reserves they have them. Anyway, if you've got anybody, as I say, in your family who's a fisher person, I suppose that's a woke, expression, a lovely book to buy for a Brizzy. You know, Christmas will be upon us before we even think about it. Freshwater Fishes of Southern Africa, a complete guide by Paul Skelton. You'll find it in any good bookshop. I'm just looking at the... I've got to put my glasses on. Kate, they mentioned in the news that we have three of the top hotels. And if it... They mentioned in the news that we have three of the top hotels. I know, now off the top of my head, the very fancy one in Cape Town I've stayed at, Element House. Element House is one. I'm just trying to think of the other two. I don't want to give you the wrong information. I can only off the top of my head remember Element House. But I mean, I'm just in the process of updating Foda's Essential Guide to South Africa. We don't know a lot about Foda's in this country, but Foda's is an American publishing company that published over 300 guidebooks. And let me tell you, they get 4 million visits to their website every month. 4 million visits. So that's how powerful it is. So at the moment, I'm doing some trips around. I'm updating in Mpumalanga and Kruger and Sabisand and the surrounding reserves. And I can tell you that really we have some of the top hospitality establishments in the world. And as you know, I'm very well traveled. You go to some of our lodges, even some of our simpler, less expensive guest houses, you get wonderful food, you get excellent accommodation. And friendliness is what you get. So I think it was Carol who asked that question. Carol, I'll try and find out. In fact, Senna's going to Google it now, so I'll be able to tell you what the other two are. But that's pretty good to be up among the top hotels in the world. Now, the other book I know you'll love. This is for all of us because it's by Richard Osman, the best-selling author of The Thursday Murder Club. You know the books. We've all read them. We love them. His new one is it's called We Solve Murders. And I'll tell you about that very quickly after the break because I can see we've got Zelda on the line. Whoopee!
This is Kate Turkington on Travels with Kate, only on 101.9 High FM.
So that's a book you will love, Richard Osman. It's his new series, We Solve Murders. And if you love the Thursday Murder Club, you're going to love this. And it's published by Penguin Viking. But more to the point, I want to tell you about Zelda Lahronje's new book, What Nelson Mandela Taught Me. And just a little bit of an introduction, although I'm sure you know her and you know her name. Zelda Lahronje, she worked alongside Nelson Mandela as private secretary and his closest aide for almost 20 years. It's a long, long time. And in 24, I'm sure you'll remember, personal bestseller, Good Morning, Mr. Mandela. Now, when he died, she had to readjust her life hugely. And in a moment, I think, she will tell us of grief and anger at how she saw Nelson Mandela's dreams of a new South Africa begin to fade. She sent off a barrage of angry tweets on social media. And, you know, this was a few years ago. So at that time, we didn't know about the avalanche of trolling and abuse that can follow if you do put something up on social media that maybe you've done in a bit of hate. Abuse, hatred, even obscenity. Now, her new book, as I said, it's called What Nelson Mandela Taught Me, Timeless Lessons on Leadership and Life, published by Tafelberg. And in it, she writes about not only how she learned from, shall we say, her mistakes or her impulsiveness, but also how she applied some of the lessons that Madiba had taught her to steady her own life. That's an awfully long introduction, Zelda, but I wanted to make sure that everybody knew exactly the context of what we're talking about. So welcome, first of all. But before we talk about the new book, please remind us how a blonde Afrikaans Maisie got the job with Nelson Mandela in the first place. You were in your 20s.
Hi, Kate. Let me say thank you very much for having me, and it's great to speak to you. Yes, so I was 24 years of age in 1994 when I applied for a position that was advertised in President Mandela's office. But then I ended up getting a job working for his private secretary, Mary Nkladana was her name. And after about 2-3 years, I got promoted to become one of the president's private secretaries. And then when he retired in 1999 from the presidency, he could choose one person to work with him in retirement. And that was the biggest honor of my life, being chosen by him to then work with him until he passed in December 2013.
And he used to call you Zeldina. There's a lovely photograph in the book of the letter. You say it's your most prized possession. May I read it? Dear Zeldina, you are undoubtedly are a remarkable, strong and fearless young lady. We love you very much. Sincerely, Mum, Grasa and Kubu. That makes the hairs on my arms stand up. Now, Zelda, just talk us through, because the book really starts, talk us through what happened with those tweets. I mean, we've all done it. Maybe we haven't done it on social media, but maybe we've shot off a message to a family member, or we've done something we thought afterwards, why didn't I keep my mouth shut? Just talk us through that.
Yes, yeah, so Kate, it was 2015, and you remember at the time that we did not know the depth of state capture at that stage, but people, South Africans and the general public was starting to feel the effects of bad civil service delivery. The economy was really struggling. So at that point, a lot of blame was still being thrown around by politicians. Of course, it was a divisive tactic, a divide and rule tactic. And I was on a plane to England, and on the plane there was these headlines that continued to appear on the screen throughout the night about how South Africa's problems are all being blamed on apartheid, and how Jacob Zuma blames white people specifically for our woes. And of course, we know that is only half the story, but I got very angry. And as you know, the first rule of social media is that you should never go onto social media when you are angry. And, in that moment, I just lost my mind and chose very, very bad or incorrect words to express myself in that moment of anger. And then because I said it, if anyone else said it, it wouldn't have made a difference. But because of my association with Madiba, it caused a lot of turmoil, and it divided people even further, because then, people from both sides of the political divide were fighting about my tweets. And it's, I say to people, it's like the dogs that start barking in your street. The last dog that start barking doesn't know what the first one started barking about. So that's the effect of social media. At the end, they're no longer fighting about the tweets, but they're fighting each other just because there is this this opportunity. So it was really a very awful experience, and it affected me emotionally quite a bit. But if I look back today, I'm quite grateful for it, because it led me to really assess what have I actually learned from Nelson Mandela, and can I apply those lessons, and are they practical to apply in 2024?
Yes, because you use a very good analogy in the book about the storm, the media storm that followed, and you've just almost used it again with the dogs. It's like a pack of hyenas following a wounded animal, and they won't give up. They will not give up. So what was the worst thing about it all, Zelda?
The worst thing I felt for me is that, you know, when you speak to people that you trust, because you also have to learn on social media that you shouldn't pay attention to every comment, mm-hmm. and you shouldn't engage with people who do not have the bravery to stand with their real names behind what they mm-hmm. say. When people that I trust and people whose judgment I specifically trust, that when they said they were disappointed in me, and I think that kind of disappointment that I then felt in myself, you know, that I was so mindless in that moment with the words that I chose, and then that I hurt ordinary people, because the tweets had a racial spin to it, because I said that, you know, white tax money is only good enough. That was just one of the tweets. And whereas I realized that, you know, a lot of Black people, or mostly Black people, have suffered much more than I have in this country. And my words were insensitive to them and their mm-hmm. feelings and their suffering. Mm-hmm. So I think it's that kind of disappointment. And then thinking to myself that even Madiba would have been disappointed in my mm-hmm. choice of words. So, you know, not necessarily with me criticizing the government, because I think that's something that we should never shy away from.
Exactly.
Because that's what democracy is all about. But the way in which you do it is quite important. And this brought me on this wonderful journey of really discovering the lessons again that Madiba taught me.
And I think you're very brave, Zelda, because in your new book, you publish again those tweets. You don't shy away from it. You're not hiding behind anything. They're all there to read again. And I must tell you, I had forgotten that media storm, and you made the point very cogently in your book that what's news today is even more so today. What's news today is gone tomorrow because something else has happened. And then you just spoke briefly now about the good that came out of it. Tell us more about that.
Yes, I think, Kate, for me, the most important thing that happened through that whole experience is that I found connection with, you know, so many South Africans, ordinary people again. And looking back at the experience, you know, I was distraught, and it was terrible for me, because when you walk in the streets, you see people's judgment of you, you know, and also it's cancel culture. You know, people don't want to be associated with you. I lost a lot of work. And then, you know, an ordinary person in a line where I was applying for a visa to visit England again, coincidentally, this very ordinary Black woman came up to me and she said to me, "Are you Zelda?" And I immediately thought that I need to be on my back foot, you know, because I need to defend myself and apologize to her. But then she just said to me, she reached out and she said, "Can I give you a hug?" And, you know, I just broke down, and we both broke down, and she said then that she watched this whole episode happen, and because of where she worked, she couldn't defend me, and she couldn't get involved in the whole row. And I appreciate that of people. You can't, you know, you have associations that you need to consider. But the wonderful thing that came out of that is I'm still in contact today with that lady.
Oh, goodness.
She's just a wonderful person, and she ended up attending one of my book launches recently. So you know, you make so many human connections, and that was for me so meaningful, because then I also thought, and I had to come to realize, that ordinary people can change your life, you know, so they can save your life, but it's within our power. I can be that person, but just showing kindness and compassion to someone, I can be that person as well. And I think that's what made Nelson Mandela such a great leader, is that you know, he realized how that small individual actions really made a huge difference in people's lives.
You talk in the book, when you're talking about him at one stage, you said when he talked to somebody, whomsoever it was, that person immediately felt they were the only person in the world. That is a real gift, isn't it?
It's absolutely Kate, but it's also not impossible. You know, I find myself standing in the shopping mall, you know, when I have to pay for my groceries, and I'm on my phone, you know, while I'm busy paying, not giving attention to the person that scans the items even. And I pull myself back all the time and I look into the person's eyes and I greet them and I say their name because they've got a name tag on. And I ask about their life. And, you know, you can see what it means to a person to just acknowledge their humanity. And at the end of the day, that's what we all want. You want your humanity acknowledged by someone and you want to be treated in a dignified way. So, you know, I think this whole experience from the Bad Twitter experience to me discovering Madiba's lessons again have really now taught me, you know, to look a person in the eyes and do exactly that what Madiba did and connect to the human being. Because it's not a trait that we can't learn. You know, it's something that you that you can achieve in your daily life, and it makes you feel good. You know, that's the whole thing. I think it made Madiba feel good all the time because he realized how important it was for people to be acknowledged.
And you also, when you talk about him, you say what a good listener he was, and you think, well, you know, that's because when he was growing up, he learned to listen, the counsel of the elders.
That's right. And I think for us, you know, that's something that we really, really struggle with as society because of this age of instant gratification. You say things because you want a response and also that need for acknowledgement and to be liked and to be famous, you know, it's something that drives people today. So we forget to listen to people completely. And you know, Madiba's first childhood memory. So me saying that means that it was very meaningful to him that this was his first childhood memory, and that he learned to listen by attending meetings of the elders, and then observing that the leader of the meeting's only purpose was to listen and to summarize at the end and not give his own input. And that had this unquestionable influence on his own ability to listen. And that's what made him such a successful leader, because he truly listened to people to understand rather than wanting to respond all the time. And you know, there's many occasions on which he would just listen to you. And at the end, he would just say to you, oh, yes, very, very well, I see. And that didn't mean that he necessarily agreed with you or that he condoned whatever, you know, your behavior, but it meant that he listened and that he observed.
And compassion, you know, forgiveness. I always think forgiveness is a bit of an overrated virtue, because who are we to forgive? I think there's a kind of acceptance rather than forgiveness. But you tell the story of Hansi Cronje. Tell us that story, Zelda.
Yeah, so Hansi was, in those days, it wasn't known as cancel culture, but he was cancelled effectively after he admitted to taking money to fix a match in India. And after he admitted to it, you know, people disassociated from him. No one wanted to be seen with him. And he lost a lot of sponsorship and so on, rightfully so. And about 6 months after this, after he admitted at the King Commission, Madiba announced that he wanted to see Hansi because we were traveling to Fanport where Hansi lived. And, you know, at first we tried to advise him otherwise, to say to him, you know, reputationally we have to look at this from all angles. And, you know, Hansi has been dishonest. And even though I was a friend of Hansi, you know, Madiba's image and his public image was always a priority to me. And despite, you know, us trying to convince him otherwise, he insisted. And when we got to Hansi, he had tea with Hansi. And then after exchanging in courtesy, you know, and necessities and talk, making small talk, Madiba then said to Hansi, three things to Hansi. He said, my boy, you made a big mistake. And, you know, the prefix of my boy meant to me that there was a lot of emotion in it, you know, because he claimed him almost. And saying it, you know, you almost didn't want Nelson Mandela to know about your mistakes. It's fine for the world to know about it, but it aggravated the circumstances if he knew about it. So in saying it, you know, you wanted to verbalize to Hansi that I know what you've done. And then he said to him, and now you have to face the consequences. So, of course, we knew that there were going to be charges, probably fraud charges brought against Hansi. But then Madiba gave him a lifeline, and he said to him, but it doesn't mean we love you less.
Uh-huh.
And to me, that was so beautiful, because that's all Hansi wanted to hear. He knew what he did, and he knew that there would be consequences, but he wanted to be loved, because, again, that is, Kate, what we all want. We want to be loved. And you know, Madiba showed in that moment so much compassion and kindness for telling Hansi that, you know, we are not condoning your behavior, and it is dishonest, and I despise dishonesty, but you are still a human being, and you are a complex human being like all of us, and now you have to learn from your mistakes.
I love that phrase. Now, that doesn't mean we love you less. It's so simple, but it's so, so powerful. I remember the impact of that. Well, I think my oldest grandson was about 7 at the time, and big cricket fan, and worshipped Hansi Cronje. And I can remember him saying to me, but Granny, he told lies. He was, you know, it shocked all of us. And just reading the press this morning, Zora, I don't know if you've read it. Sia Khaleesi and Rachel are going to get divorced. That's going to create a big media. I don't know about Storm, but it's going to be in the news, because Sia Khaleesi is somebody who is worshipped by all of us. Maybe not worshipped, but so, so admired. And Rachel, too, who has done so much. But there's going to be, I'd like to hear your thoughts on that. We're going to take a commercial break first, but I just read it this morning and was so shocked. The perfect couple. The perfect, nobody's perfect. Nobody's perfect.
This is Kate Turkington on Travels with Kate, only on 101.9 High FM.
And I'm chatting with Zola LaRonge about her new book, What Nelson Mandela Taught Me, Timeless Lessons on Leadership and Life. I loved it, Zola, I must tell you. I'm a very fast reader, as my listeners know. So I sat down and started at 5 o'clock and finished it at 8 o'clock. Started with a cup of tea, ended with a whistle. with a whiskey and my rescue Jack Russell looking at me. And going back to, yes, this whole story is going to, you know, result in some kind of media storm. And obviously, you know, I would not ask you. I realized I said to you, what do you think? That's the worst thing. You wouldn't say. You've learned. None of us now would say, maybe only to close friends or family, what we think. But in the public domain, it's a time bomb, as you learned yourself. But going back to the compassion that Nelson Mandela always showed, he was a very, very close friend of Bill Clinton too. And then almost, and it's terrible, but that's the way our minds were. Almost, we don't remember Bill Clinton being a good president or bad president. We all still remember Monica Lewinsky and the incident where he claimed he didn't have sex with her, and then it came out he did. And Monica Lewinsky is still recovering from that all these years later. I mean, she's gone on. She's got a PhD from the London School of Economics. She's really put her life back together. But that kind of stain, if you like, unintentional pun, always hangs over her. So what did Madiba say to Bill Clinton? Because they were very close friends.
Yes, Kate, and I think I don't think you were unfair to ask about Sia and Rachel.
Yeah.
They're both very good friends of mine, and I'm as distraught as everyone else this morning about that.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, in starting off to answering about Bill Clinton, I think just to say that, you know, Nelson Mandela had this ability, and he appreciated complexity of people. He himself had a child out of wedlock, and, you know, not many things were written about it before, but, you know, people have alluded to it. And since Johnny Steinberg's book, you know, that, you know, it's out in the open, it's written in books now. So I also allude to it in the book. So Madiba understood, you know, that we are human beings and we make mistakes. And the same with President Clinton was, he was the president of this, you know, the superpower this of America at the time. And although he said similar things that he said to Hansi, to Clinton, to say, you've made a mistake, you know, but you are human, you're a man, you know, people falter. But I don't believe that this will affect the way you lead the superpower. And, you know, it's that kind of confidence also that President Clinton needed at that stage. And, you know, recently I had a talk with a pharmaceutical company in England, and they were instrumental in working with President Clinton to get antiretroviral drugs in South Africa available to our people. So, you know, it's very easy for us because it's human. We only remember the worst of a person. But the good that has been done by him shouldn't be forgotten. And Madiba knew that, you know, you have to focus on the good that the person does, because he himself was not faultless and he himself faltered on many occasions. And, you know, he wrote about it and he spoke openly about it, but that made him so much better at understanding people's complexities and that we are creatures of contradiction. You know, I may say something today, but tomorrow I may do the opposite. And he understood that, and he really encouraged people to see a human being with all those complexities and appreciate the human being for that, but to focus on the good that the person is doing.
And to look forward, keep looking forward.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, I think I'm an old person, you're a young person. Usually it's only, and I'm generalizing because I always do, it's usually only when one gets much, much older that one comes to almost complete self-awareness. You suddenly realize why you behave the way you did. You don't regret stuff. Like in my life, I would do everything exactly the same. I wouldn't want to know what I know now when I was younger. But that self-awareness you've come to early, I think. Was it, do you think, because of those mistakes? Or was it also because of Madiba's friendship and trust in you?
Yes, I think it's both, Kate. I don't think that I would really have delved into those lessons and experiences had it not been for, you know, the whole Twitter episode. So I do think, you know, that both work together. And as I say in the book, I don't believe we are ever completely changed or evolved as human beings. We stop changing the day we die. But to be curious about your own behavior and to be aware, as you say, that self-awareness all the time, it can be exhausting, but it's necessary because it contributes so much, or it can break down so much in society if we are not. And, you know, it's also not because of smartphones. I say we live in the age of smartphones and stupid people now. You know, we are not self-aware enough. We don't see our actions and things enough. And I'm tempted always, you know, to jump into a conversation about something, but then I remind myself that not everyone sees things the way I see it. And sometimes you have to leave people to go through their own experiences because I can attest to it. That's how you learn. And it takes sometimes a bad experience like this to really, really learn from your mistakes.
And sometimes you just have to keep your mouth shut. I mean, I have a very big family, and sometimes I hear somebody say something, and maybe 20, 30 years ago, I would have said, oh, you're talking rubbish or whatever. Now I've learned. And anybody who's listening, parents, particularly grandparents, you know, you see people making mistakes and you just have to keep your mouth shut. That's something you learn.
Yes, Kate, and also I think that you know, if we want to create a better society around us, we have to take time to contemplate things like we did in you know, in the age before we had smartphones. And we don't do that enough. We don't pause and think, you know, what kind of effect will my words have on a person? You know, people are trolling people and bullying people on social media without any restraint. And it's not only me, you know, even with the CI and Rachel issue this morning, you can see people are, you know, they just can't with they can't control themselves to jump into the conversation and say things that are really unnecessary. And what you don't think of is that in 20, 30 years from now, CI's children, no matter who made a mistake, no matter what the consequences, or no matter what the situation that caused this to be, CI's children is going to read things that people say about their parents today. So people don't think of that kind of hurt because they can be nameless and anonymous. And, you know, I've just decided I withhold myself from commenting on things that is none of my business, because I wouldn't walk in the street and comment about someone walking past me just for the sake of commenting. So why would I do that on social media? And it made me a happier person because I don't feel obliged that anyone needs my opinion all the time on things.
Okay, we're going to take a short break, Zelda, and then I'm coming back to you.
This is Kate Turkington on Travels with Kate, only on 101.9 High FM.
Welcome back, and I'm talking to Zelda Laurange, and I always repeat the name because it's so irritating. I'm sure it's happened to all of you. You've walked into a room and the television's on, you turn on the radio, you hear two people talking, you've got no idea who they are, so it's nice just to let you know who we are talking to. Now, Zelda, bit of a personal question. Your book is divided into four parts, and they've all got different titles. One is called Who Am I Without Madiba? So here we are, nearly at the end of 2024. Who are you, Zelda?
I am a very proud and optimistic Afrikaans-speaking South African. And, you know, I've got a mind of my own and a very strong will. And I'm determined to help in whatever way I can to make this country work, not only for myself, but for everyone around me. I am associated to Nelson Mandela because of my history. And I take that association very seriously, and I try and touch people's lives with my storytelling and sharing the experiences that I was so fortunate and privileged to have had. So I think that's who I am.
And I must say, in Zelda's book, both of the books, she does tell us stories and she does tell us anecdotes, but she guards Madiba's privacy very, very closely. There's nothing, she tells the truth as she sees it, but she doesn't divulge anything that shouldn't be divulged, shall we say. And Zelda, it's just a comment. I love, there's one particular photograph I love of Madiba and Graça Machel, his wife, sitting on a beach in Mozambique, and Madiba's paddling his feet. Just tell it, they loved Mozambique, didn't they?
Yes, Kate. You know, Madiba was very unstable on his feet, but he saw Mrs. Machel and myself swimming in the sea every day and sunbathing and so on. And he was sitting on a veranda, so he was watching us from the veranda, but one day then he announced that he also would like to be close to us. And so the security guards helped him to get into the sea and we put this plastic chair, as you see in the photo, in the sea. And just the joy that it brought on his face, because you remember his memory of the sea. I mean, he was surrounded by it for 18 years and he had no joy from the ocean in those years. But for the first time, he really just enjoyed the warm waters also of the Indian Ocean breaking over his legs. So it was a moment in time that I wish I could, you know, my mind would better capture, and I wish I remembered that whole episode in more detail, because it was really something. It was really a very, very special moment, and I'm very, very happy that I took a photo of that moment, where you can see a little bit of that joy on his face.
And I think that's a lovely moment to leave you for now, Zelda, of Madiba sitting there with his feet paddling there in the surf, and as you say, the joy on his face. Thanks so much for talking to us. Really, it's been great. Thank you.
Kate, I have to thank you, and thank you very much for your wonderful show, and good luck to you. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay. I will be away next week. Craig's going to find a super documentary to play at this time, and because I'm off traveling doing a writing trip, as I told you, updating. And hang on, I'm just trying to read the screen here. Yes, okay, I'm on mic here, I'm trying to read. Okay, Carol, the best hotels, yeah, no, I still think 10 best hotels in the world. I'm just looking, Maldives, Indonesia. I think it's only, I can see, Element in our top 10. But we'll find out about the others too. Well, that's all for this week. Thanks for listening. Travel safely. Look after yourselves. Look after others too.